Marks, and welcome to the On Your Marks Book Review Podcast. This week I review the book Sex Robots and Vegan Meat, Adventures at the Frontier of Birth, Food, Sex and Death by Jenny Kleeman. The book published in 2020 caught my eye at a local bookstore last year as I was embarking on my own journey into veganism. I was yet to discover how fanatical vegans are, and I was still reading and learning, and well, this title of course just jumped out at me, and how could I not buy the book? The book of course has very little to do with veganism per se, and I quickly added it to my read later pile. I must say my life is poorer for not having read this book when I bought it. What an absolute treat of a read. Kleeman, a UK-based writer, journalist and videographer, and my absolute current intellectual crush, has written this book around an interesting thesis. As she says in the opening pages, we are on the brink of an age when technology will redefine birth, food, sex, and death, the fundamental elements of our existence. Until now, human life has always meant emerging from our mother's body, living off the flesh of dead animals, and seeking our sexual relationships with other humans, until it ends with a death we can neither avoid nor control. End quote. Across four sections of the book, each devoted to one of these elements of our existence, she explores the frontiers of thinking, innovation and change as they relate to these fundamental building blocks of being human. I reflected as I read the book on which of these four she should start with. She starts with sex, and I think it's a masterful choice, not only because it's likely to draw people into the book, but because it is such a fascinating section of the book. She tracks down and engages with an assorted cast of characters who are involved in the sex robot industry. Mind you, these are not hollow blow-up dolls, but complex pieces of engineering, many now with AI, that retail for anything from $6,000 for a basic model. What drives the innovators is a range of motivations, some purely financial, others seeking to find that elusive Shangri-La of creating the perfect companion, and some crazy people convinced that the doll might be useful to the sexually violent as an alternative to gender-based violence. There is, of course, the immediate observation that the industry takes the idea of personifying women as an object to its highest form, yet surprisingly even women in the business don't see that. Kleeman watches as a dancer in Las Vegas has a mold made of her body for one of the range of dolls. When she's asked how she feels, knowing that men around the world will have her body as their sex robot, she replies, well, it doesn't really bother me. If anything, I'm helping someone with their intimacy. I think men have needs. Whatever they do, as long as I'm not there, I'm fine with it. End quote. Kleeman also tracks down Dave Catt, a man very open about his relationship with his robot partner. Dave Catt has constructed a complex backstory for his partner, whose name is Sedora, with whom he has had a committed marriage for 16 years. While not a legal marriage, they have matching wedding bands, and in fact a polyamorous relationship with a second sex doll, Elena. Interestingly, the sex doll industry is taken pretty seriously in China. The dolls are seen as a kind of early release of domestic worker robots. Much like Elon Musk tested the market for Tesla with his high-end Roadster and then released the Model S, the Chinese company DS Dolls is using a similar strategy, teasing out the market, so as to speak, for their real doll, but actually eyeing the much larger and more lucrative middle market for robots in the service industry, and in particular in sectors where human-like contact is wanted. Kleeman rightly questions not just the objectification of women through these sex robots, but what is likely to happen to us as women. As she says in the book, and I quote, it's possible to have an ideal sexual relationship without ever having to compromise, where the pleasure of only one half of the relationship matters, and where empathy is no longer a requirement for social interaction. End quote. Empathy is what seems to drive the following section of the book, The Future of Food. While Kleeman makes a strong argument for not consuming animal protein, she herself is not a vegan or a vegetarian, what was most intriguing about the section was the growth and investment in what is being called clean meat companies. Plant-based meat, such as that produced by Impossible Meats and Beyond Meat, both plant food tech startups really, that reach unicorn status within very little time, are in fact plant substitute products. Where Kleeman sees the real innovation is in lab-grown meat, real meat that can be grown without killing the animal. It's still in the early stages and crazy expensive. She gets the chance to consume a single lab-grown chicken nugget, which cost in the hundreds of dollars to produce. But I guess it's a start. What was intriguing for me was how producers had sought to understand how animal protein itself is constructed. For example, red meat is complex to produce in the lab, as the marbling of fat through the meat is somewhat random, and this is very difficult to replicate. Fish, on the other hand, is systematically layered and so very easy to produce. And lab-grown meat sausage is the kind of sweet spot, given that who knows what goes into a sausage. A debate through the chapter is, does eating lab-grown meat in many ways a better substitute for plant-based meat for those craving the taste and feel of animal flesh, does it still qualify one as a vegan? No real clarity is offered and the debate does rage on, but as one producer suggests, and I quote, "We don't want this to be seen as vegan, we want this to be seen as food. My hope is to make everyone vegan without in fact changing their habits," end quote. The sections in the book on birth and death were somewhat disturbing. I can't pin down why. Maybe because these acts are so private and personal when compared to eating and I guess sex. The section on birth focuses on two things, surrogacy and ectogenesis. Surrogacy was nothing new, although Kleeman does unearth some interesting people and ideas in this area. Troubling was the way in which developed countries were often used as a location for surrogates, for those in the developed world. In some cases, young women are kept in virtual imprisonment while carrying the child of a rich Westerner. Legislation seems to be catching up and regulating this practice, but what this illustrated was the desire of men and women to have a child without enduring the rigors of pregnancy and childbirth. It is this that has led to development in the field of ectogenesis, reproduction outside the human body. This term is not new. It dates back to J.B.S. Haldane, who delivered a lecture in 1923 to the Cambridge University Heretic Society, in which he described this as some kind of future invention. Interestingly, Churchill picked up this idea in 1931 in an article titled 50 Years Hence, in which he wrote, and I quote, "There seems little doubt that it will be possible to carry out in artificial surroundings the entire cycle which now leads to the birth of a child," end quote. A number of centres around the world are experimenting with this technology, for now with animals, but it's likely that human trials will follow. Kleeman debates, well, when does birth occur? And as she says in the book, it's no longer about being pushed or pulled into the world, it's about being separated from the life support that you rely on as a fetus. What shocked me in this section of the book was the chapter entitled Finally Women Made Obsolete and the Men Going Their Own Way movement. I say movement, but it seems to be largely a vocal fringe group online. But some of the rhetoric and sentiment from this group was absolutely horrifying. Granted, of course, with the anonymity of the internet, people can say almost anything. And while some responses suggested a genuine desire on the part of men to have their own children, one in particular left me cold, and I quote, "Our holy duty is prying reproduction away from women and then removing women altogether physically." Horrifying stuff indeed. The section on death was, while somewhat depressing, rather interesting. She tracks the practices of assisted suicide. I had heard, of course, of Dr. Kevorkian, a US doctor who had assisted a number of people with their suicides, but wasn't aware of the process or his rationale. It's a fascinating intellectual debate. Do we have the right to take our own lives? And what role or right does the state play in deciding for us? Based on one of the groups she attends in London, in which people pay and get all the instruction for a DIY death, this seems to attract a larger group than one might think. The development of a death machine, equipment that gives control over to the person but within the structures of a well-designed and painless death, was absolutely intriguing. She meets Philip, an Australian doctor and someone deeply immersed in this world, who has been given the moniker of the Elon Musk of suicide. This due to his sleek and elegant Sarco machine. The machine can be 3D printed anywhere and uses liquid nitrogen to rapidly drop the oxygen level and lead to a peaceful death. The machine then itself becomes your coffin. Kleeman tracks somebody down who shares her experience or observations of this machine, and I quote, "You have an elegant device that actually makes you high and elevated before you take off, right? It's in some beautiful setting because you can take it to your favorite place. That, aesthetically, is the perfect death. But what is really profoundly the perfect death is that you have made amends with everybody, and you're at peace with what occurred in your life and your own mortality. You have cut ties with those attachments to your personal belongings, your resentments, your addictions, your anger. That is the perfect death for me. End quote. Deeply thought-provoking. And therein lies the genius of this outstanding book. Kleeman takes the reader on a journey from the tawdry world of sex robots to considering our own demise. In this journey, I think she offers us a view of how technology is in fact returning choice to each of us, something that really surprised me when I reflected on the book, but choice nonetheless. Well, thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. In the week ahead, I am reading the book Wherever You Go, There You Are by Jon Kabat-Zinn, an interesting treatise on the world of mindfulness. This is also my midway point, book 26, so please look out for that review next Tuesday. I hope you have an absolutely wonderful weekend.